Welcome everybody to All About Simeon Insight podcast number 236, recording this on Friday the 12th of April 2013. It's been just over 2 weeks since our last podcast. With me I have Rafe Blanford.
Hello everybody. Yes, just back after, yes, as you say, just over 2 weeks. But there's been a surprising number of app updates in the meantime, so I don't think we're going to have any trouble filling this particular podcast, Steve.
Yes, the applications and the updates continue to flow, including a couple of controversial ones, which we'll come to later in the podcast. In the meantime, the big news is the new Symbian hardware, the new Symbian device, the Revolution codename, running Symbian LE with a full QWERTY keyboard. Did you catch this one? Launched on April the 1st. Rafe?
Yes, well, it was released on April the 1st, and we're talking about it on April the 12th, so I'm sure we're going to get into trouble for that. I looked at this and just for a moment thought, hang on, I'm sure I'd have known if that was coming. And then I realised the date and I realised that Steve had been having some fun. But it kind of makes a serious point that there are, you know, still potential form factors out there that attract quite a bit of interest. And this was a case in point. And I think here, Steve's Photoshop skills probably weren't at his very best. But turning a Cyan Revo into a potential Symbian device raised a few eyebrows, but you got all the code names right, and yes, it would have been something like Nokia LE or whatever was coming down the pipe that sadly never happened.
I do like to produce something that's vaguely sensible and thought-provoking on April Fool's Day, Rafe, rather than do something totally outrageous which people dismiss. I want to make people think. I want to inspire people. Yes, I wish that really could be true.
Yes, I'm not sure I can quite agree. I hope this one exists. I mean, okay, yes, it would be great to see another Symbian device. But things like inductive stylus don't exactly fill me with a great deal of pain. 4.3-inch AMOLED screen, yeah, that's okay. But if I was going to have a QWERTY device in that kind of clamshell form factor, I'd actually rather go back to the full size of something like the Cyan 5 and have that keyboard, because the Revo keyboard, I do remember, I just found it a little bit on the pokey side. But yeah, you certainly got enough comments saying, yes, wouldn't this be a nice idea? I'm not sure we fooled too many people this time round.
There we go. Last year I produced the Nokia E710. And I actually got a professional artist in to do the artwork, unlike this year. At least I didn't put the pencil sharpener in this year, Rafe, though.
Well, pencil sharpeners on devices, I still maintain that's a convergence trend that's yet to arrive.
Now, in the previous podcast, we did talk about Nokia Public Transport and the way that the data sets have been increased in depth due to Nokia's investment in their HERE platform and the Windows Phone and Nokia Maps endeavours, and the Symbian users can get the benefit, but only if they were using the Nokia Beta Labs version of Nokia Public Transport 2.5. Now, it seems like someone at Nokia was listening to the podcast, because they've now pulled the trigger and released a version 2.5 as a full release via the Nokia store. So on your Symbian device, just go into the Nokia store and you should see it as an update waiting bottom right hand of the screen, a little blue one or so forth, or you can just search for public transport, bring it up, and there should be a nice big update button, and you'll be fully up to date and you can carry on public transporting for months, if not years, to come.
It does, yeah. Everyone can get on the train, the bus, the tram, or whatever it happens to be. I said last week that I think this is one of the most underrated of Nokia's kind of transport apps, and I would maintain that. Just the amount of information that's available and the convenience that this can bring really is worthwhile. And people sort of sometimes ask me, you know, why do you worry about these releases? You know, they're available in Beta Labs. Well, the simple answer to that is, as Steve kind of hinted at there, not everyone bothers with Beta Labs. In fact, the vast majority of people only download this update once it becomes more generally available. Indeed, even the fact it's available isn't actually means it's going to be in sort of loads of people's phones, because not everyone downloads app updates instantly. I know it's probably shocking to hear that if you're a smartphone fan and not everyone's interested in Beta Labs. I mean, despite the fact that Beta Labs does get tens of thousands of downloads, when you're measuring it against the millions of devices, it's not that many. So it's kind of a shame that there can't be a slightly more forceful push out of updates like this. I mean, I would be tempted to use something like SW Update for it, given that it's, you know, one of Nokia's core apps. I don't think you can do that for every app. And of course, there is the update functionality in Nokia Store. It took a long time to arrive, and it does work fine. And I'm guessing that's how Steve actually found out about this particular release. I know I haven't updated it on my phone. I mean, I've been using the beta version. It works perfectly fine. But as Steve said, always best to get the latest build and get all the bug fixes.
Of course, there is the time to install Nokia Public Transport. You may remember that the original map suite. Took around 25 minutes to install on my Nokia N8 back in the day. Public transport isn't much quicker. I think it installs it basically byte by byte, 1-0 and 1-0 and 1, and it takes about 5 minutes, which is just ridiculous really in 2013, but there we go. Make yourself a cup of tea and you should be fully installed. Moving on, Quasar MX. It's been a while since we saw a really good third-party music player. This is quite ambitious. This takes over the whole processing of your music files. It doesn't just decode the MP3 and then shove it out the headphones. It takes the whole sound spectrum and passes it through EQ, amplification. It can handle gapless playback by buffering the audio internally and joining the various bits together, overlaying them so that there's almost no gap. You get a cover art downloader, a lyrics downloader built in. You get an artist bio downloader built in. You get an amplification feature because it's handling the whole of the audio spectrum and the waveform. If you have a really quiet podcast or a quiet piece of music, and even on max volume on your phone, you can't hear it properly, you can apply this artificial amplification, which raises the whole waveform. And there's also some rather clever logic there that stops you blowing out your headphones or indeed your eardrums or distorting the music. Highly, highly recommended. The big downside is that the fact that all this extra processing does drain more of your processor's power, and therefore there's more battery drain. So I guess if you were to listen to music flat out using Quasar MX, you'll probably go through about twice the battery of just listening on the standard Symbian music player, but still a pretty decent piece of software, Rafe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does have a kind of a non-standard UI. I mean, it's using some of the standard UI elements, which may put some people off. But as you say, something like gapless playback, I mean, I can remember being asked time and time again when a new device came out or when there was a software update, does this support gapless playback? It's never anything I've used myself. I have no desire for it, but I know it's a big thing amongst some people. You know, if you're playing back an album that is designed to be listened to in one go with no gaps, obviously you spoil the experience if you get that couple of seconds pause between the playback of tracks. I suspect there's something that will be of maybe more interest, particularly as you say, to the music purists, is this ability to play back Ogg Vorbis and the FLAC files, because I know that some people have their entire music collection kind of encoded in that. For me personally, I actually found the cover art working fine. I mean, I did actually get all my music collection into a format that the Symbian music player recognized. It took a long while, but Cover Up, one of the apps we've mentioned in previous podcasts, helped a lot with that. But having lyrics and artist bio download, you know, if you're listening to music and you just want to have that kind of full experience that you don't really get on other music playback methods, you know, this is, you know, a really great app, and it's one of those replacement apps that isn't just sort of providing a kind of alternative UI or a skin or something like that. It really is providing extra functionality that you can't get in the kind of the default music player. So I'm always happy to see these kind of apps arrive in the Nokia store or indeed wherever else it happens to be.
Yes, great to see an application of this stature arriving this late in the day in Symbian's life cycle. Also arriving, Save the Kitty, another great physics-based game. As far as I can see, it's a Symbian first. It's not on other platforms, but I could be wrong. Essentially, you have a kitty, acrobatic kitty, that drops from the top of the screen to the bottom to a receptacle, but there are things in its way. There are bombs, and you've got to also get it to catch the fish that are scattered around the playing area by getting the kitty to bounce off for trampolines and solid barriers and move along conveyor belts and rise in bubbles, which you then have to pop. It's all rather complicated. A great logic game. Over 54 levels in the full game for a couple of quid. Plays really, really well and highly recommended, Rafe.
Oh, well, I'll have to give that one a download. I haven't tried it yet. But you're right. I mean, it is remarkable in some ways that we're still getting these really fully featured apps appearing. But it's a kind of a reflection of the fact that, you know, there are some people out there who want to continue to create apps. I mean, I think Quasar MX, for example, is probably a bit of a labour of love. You know, yes, it's a great app. I'm not sure that everybody will want to dash out and download this. I mean, games are a bit different because they are, as we've mentioned in the past, kind of this disposable content. So while there's a big install base out there, I suspect there's always going to be a demand for new games. You know, people will look on the store and say, oh, that's a new game, download and play that, and you know, it might keep them occupied for a week or a couple of months, or you know, some of these in-depth games, you know, can last even longer than that. But quite often you want something fresh and to play something new, so I sure we'll continue to see those, but even so, it is impressive that people continue to develop these apps. And some of these are individuals and some of these are kind of from bigger game development companies, but especially for the latter one, assumes that they've still got a good business case for doing so. And it comes back to what we've mentioned quite a few times in the last few months: the installed base of 100 million plus devices is still out there. And you know, I was chatting to one of my colleagues who works for another site, saying, you know, why are you still doing the Symbian stuff? And says, well, there's still plenty of demand for it. And that's reflected both in this podcast and, of course, some of these apps that we're talking about.
I'm waiting really for the quarter one 2013 results from all the different manufacturers so I can recalculate my spreadsheets and look at the installed base anew for Symbian and the other platforms. I suspect that even mid-2013, we'll still see Symbian as the third ecosystem in terms of the number of active devices out there. I did see one of the Symbian developers, I think it was of Mobler, looking at the various downloads from the Nokia store spread across the different Symbian platforms and UIs. And still in this day and age, in April 2013, they're getting over half of his downloads are coming from S60 third edition and fifth edition devices, which is just astonishing, really. In fact, I even saw a story I think you linked to or posted about the Nokia 5230 selling 150 million devices. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that is right. I mean, this is a story that was done by the Telegraph on the top 20 or so best-selling mobile phones of all time, in conjunction with the fact it was recently the 40th birthday of the mobile phone, and the 5230 was in there at 150 million. I've heard it's, you know, one of the best-selling before. I hadn't ever heard a number attached to it before, but it doesn't seem all that likely when you sort of look back and do some of the sums, because it was a period when, you know, Nokia was selling an awful lot of Symbian devices, and over sort of a couple of year period, it probably was responsible for, you know, a significant proportion. I think they may have overestimated it a little bit, but as I say, that actual number came from someone else. But you're right also, you know, with the next quarterly results, simply they're likely to be down to just a million or maybe a few million devices being sold, possibly even less than that. And of course, the install base will start to go down. Now, we've done it over 2 years to get that 100 million calculation, or 18 months, and that will vary. But of course, some people will keep on using their device for a lot longer than that. Someone will use it for shorter than that. So that 2 years is an average. But it is fair to say it will start going down now by roughly 20 million a quarter or so. How you can angle these numbers, it doesn't really matter. The point is that it doesn't sort of change overnight. It's not one switching on and the other switching off. And that applies to all the platforms. You know, BlackBerry's actually a good example of this. They haven't sold all that many in their most recent set of results. But, you know, like Symbian, they've actually been around, you know, quite a while, and so they've got a big installed base. Their switch to, you know, BlackBerry 10 is kind of more interesting. I think that may end up being a bit problematic. And just as we saw Nokia having to work really hard to kind of get going with Windows Phone, a process that's really still going on, I mean, that will be the number, I think, that everyone's watching in the next set of results, rather than Symbian. You know, will it be over the 5 million? Kind of, I think that's a psychological barrier that it may well happen this time round. And of course, it will then go on from there. But yes, don't forget that, you know, just because there are no more devices on the way and we're now more than a year since the last Symbian device was announced, it doesn't mean that people aren't continuing to use them.
I should say that people are still buying Symbian devices out there in small numbers. At least the number of people I've seen wanting to buy an 808, and you can't actually buy them in the UK properly anymore. You have to even go via Amazon UK, and you end up going through a third-party seller, importing them from Malaysia or somewhere. But still, that figure, 150 million, 5230s, wow.
I mean, we should say, in all fairness, with that figure, the vast majority of those were kind of sold effectively as feature phones. People weren't buying them as a smartphone. And the same is true, you know, of the low-end smartphone today. You know, people talk about Android devices selling in huge numbers. They absolutely are. But a lot of those, of course, are lower-end devices, which, yes, they are kind of used as smartphones. People may install a few apps, but I don't think you can necessarily categorize them in the same way that you would a mid-tier or even a high-end device. So, you know, I'd be the first to say this, you know, figure for the 5230 is impressive. But it was kind of, you know, the peak of Symbian, because the 5230, it was effectively the cheap variant of the 5800, the first touch device. And I can remember it being on sale for sort of £70 in the shop. And in other countries, it would have been, you know, similarly priced on pay-as-you-go. And so it was a very affordable device. And we spend a lot of time talking about high-end devices when you talk about smartphones. If you listen to podcasts about, you know, the smartphone technology, it's always the high-end devices. You know, the 808 being a great case in point, or the Lumia 920 on Windows Phone, the Galaxy S4. But actually the number in terms of devices that are big in terms of volumes are always the mid-tier and the lower-tier devices. And so the 5230 and some of its variants, like the 5225, I think it was, and some others, you know, they really drove Symbian's numbers for a big way. You know, it's difficult to quantify it, but sometimes it can be as much as 80% is in the kind of the mid-tier and the low end, and the high-end devices only make up 20%. I mean, people talk about the example of Samsung and say they've done a great job with the Galaxy range. They absolutely have, and the S3 and the S2, you know, both went through 40 million devices, but that only represented, you know, a portion of Samsung's Android device sales. Actually, the majority of them were on the numerous kind of lower specification devices. And I think we're about to see the same thing happen on Windows Phone, because, you know, Nokia have introduced the 50, the 520, the 620 and the 720, all of which could be considered mid-tier or low-end devices. And they've kind of done that, you know, something they've been doing with Symbian for a long time. They've kind of had this gap where they haven't had the lower specification smartphones quite so readily available. Yes, they had the 510 and the 610 and the 710, and they were good devices, but I don't think they kind of matched up to some of the higher-end devices. And, you know, we've just got the 520 and the 720 in, and they kind of are the equivalent of the cheaper Symbian devices. So I wonder whether that will kind of make a difference in device volumes going forward. Because, as I say, these lower-end devices are really, really important when it comes to just the number of units sold.
Moving on, weather clock widget. Now, we've seen other weather widgets for Symbian involving usually a little mini forecast the next 2 or 3 days, or perhaps just the weather now, and some nice icons. But this is slightly more ambitious. Weather clock widget, as the name implies, is more than just weather. It gives you the either a big widget or a small widget with a forecast for the next few days, but it also gives you the clock, i.e. the time. It also gives you the date and the day of the week. In other words, it gives you a clock, a calendar, and the weather all in one widget. And if you tap on the time, it takes you to Symbian clock. You tap on the date, it takes you to Symbian calendar. So it really is 3-in-1, and you get the 2 different choices of widgets. So highly recommended this, Rafe. I did the story on the site, but what did you think?
Yeah, well, I saw your story on it today and thought, I'm going to have to download that. And I haven't tried it out yet, but a good stat to share about weather widgets is actually it's the second most popular type of widget put on a home screen. Now, these are actually figures that combine some data from both Android and, I believe, Symbian devices. The number one, it's not surprisingly, it's the clock. But number two is weather. And those two have a lead by a long, long way. And actually, you know, it then goes into things like app shortcuts. And only after that, you start getting things like email and music. And a lot of people will only put these two widgets on. So I think the numbers I saw were about 80% for a clock, and weather was somewhere about 60%. Now, obviously, it's going to be different for everybody, but having a more flexible widget can only be a good thing. I did notice some comments on the Nokia store about this. There are a few bugs on it, but, you know, try it out yourself and give it a go. And certainly having the flexibility of displaying more days or different size is a good thing, because sometimes that home screen space can be very valuable if you've got lots of widgets on there.
People really should trust me. I knew there were some bugs in version 1.0 of the widget, which is why I waited till the bug-free 1.1 was available before I posted the story. Gah!
Ah, there we go. Well, rely on Steve rather than me, because I haven't actually tried this one out yet.
Going from a widget to something which kind of needs a widget, I did post a story on Shareboard, a new application from a new developer. Really nice idea. Rather than have to load up the whole of Nokia Social just to post update to Twitter and Facebook, or open up separate Twitter and Facebook clients. Here you just tap on the Shareboard icon. A second later, you've got a big open dialogue. Just tap in your update in text and hit send, and bang, it's shared to both networks. And in theory, the application then exits quickly as well and takes you back to wherever you were. There are a couple of minor bugs still. It still doesn't exit properly for me on the Nokia 808. And I guess the thing it really needs is perhaps a widget, Rafe, so that you could have on your home screen a widget there. You tap in the box and type in your update, and bang, you can do it all from the home screen. But even as it is, it's very, very useful. And what do you think?
Yeah, this is one I have had the opportunity to try out. And like you said, a widget would be a good idea. But frankly, I've got the shortcut icon on my home screen. And no, I can tap that one touch and sort of be doing the update. And the fact that you can, you know, choose whether it's going to Facebook or Twitter, you know, that's a good thing. And it's also got the sort of integration for posting an image very easily. I know I promised I wouldn't mention Windows Phone again, but this really did remind me of the Me Tile. But actually, it's a great bit of functionality to have, because I mean, often when you're on a mobile device, you know, you don't want to get into the whole, you know, reading the latest updates on Facebook or Twitter, but you maybe want to share what you're doing. You know, it's that kind of instant action, and you know, the way you use your smartphone is very different to sitting at a desktop computer using Facebook or Twitter. And so, you know, I think the most obvious use case is posting a message, you know, sharing what you're doing, or you want to share a photo or something like that. So SharePoint, at least for me, they've used a nice UI using kind of Qt-based widgets and all of that. And so it looks fantastic. It seems to work really well. It's all the same bugs that Steve done, but I'm pretty sure the developer will get onto those quickly, because they should be fairly easy fixes.
I do try and highlight applications in the flow section of All About Symbian that I think are worthy of highlighting, from developers who are active and listening to the community and fixing bugs and so forth, and hopefully that shows through. Web view widget, which is something that appeared on Beta Labs a few months ago, basically a way of pixel peeping onto certain coordinates on certain websites on your Symbian home screen. So every time you bring up the home screen, there's your little window onto All About Symbian or CNN.com or whichever website you want to keep an eye on. Really nice idea. Got people thinking about lateral thinking, of how different ways to use it. But it has now been pulled by Nokia Beta Labs. The trial is over. They don't want your feedback anymore. They do say they've got plans to use it again in the future at some point. In theory, you can't download it, but of course if some helpful soul whose initials are SL grabbed the SIS file and uploaded it to the news story, so see the site, and you can still download it and play with it, I guess. Just don't bother giving Nokia your feedback. I guess it was no surprise, Rafe, that it was pulled and the beta's now over.
It is. I mean, this is the way that Beta Labs works. You know, it's about collecting feedback from early adopters and, you know, people who want to try out this stuff. I mean, it's a bit unusual to see it closed and taken away altogether. But as you said, there is a sneaky way if you want to try this out yourself. But a lot of people may not realize that Beta Labs kind of originated as an internal Nokia kind of project. And it was actually used internally within the company to, you know, send out early versions of software to kind of do a wider test than would ever be possible by just testing it within the kind of software development group. And actually there is an Alpha Labs as well, which has stuff that doesn't make it to Beta Labs for whatever reason, or because it's even earlier than Beta Labs. And so this is kind of going back to that kind of behavior. Obviously it had a public test. I don't know whether this will actually, you know, become available as, you know, an update or something like that. It may just have been kind of a project to try and learn more about the way people might use this, you know, what sort of things they'll use it for, was it practical, you know, did people actually want to use it. Certainly the feedback I saw on the Beta Labs website suggested that it had been quite popular, seemed to have quite a few downloads, so it wouldn't be altogether surprising if it popped up in software update at some point in the future. But of course there's also the chance it was just, you know, are these kind of widgets that basically put a web page on your home screen practical? You mentioned Windows Phone there. I would be surprised if it appeared there, because the frameworks aren't really in place to do so. But I wouldn't be that surprised if it didn't pop up on some of the Azure devices, maybe the full screen ones, the full touch devices at some point in the future.
Good theory, Rafe, and that makes a lot more sense than my theory about it appearing on Windows Phone. An update for the Nokia 808 is apparently appearing as we record this on the Friday across the web in SW Update. So I've no idea what's in that, but I'll keep my eyes and ears posted and watch the site for any details as that comes up. Now, custom firmware. This is something I've delved in the past with the Samsung i910 HD, the Nokia X6 and 5800. In each case, stepping into the point where the manufacturers have lost interest in terms of issuing updates and keeping the device roadworthy, and looking at enthusiast compiled firmwares that you can put on instead, which give the device a whole new lease of life. Now, obviously, I wait till that point where the manufacturer has lost interest, and I don't think we've quite reached that point yet with the likes of the Nokia N8 and E7, but I wanted to just start highlighting some of the custom firmwares out there, just so that people are aware of the scene. And I did that this week with the mention of the Delight firmware, Delight 6.0 and Delight Resurrection, which sounds a bit like an Arnold Schwarzenegger film, but loads and loads of good bits and bobs in it. Some slightly less than legal, but there's some nice modifications, including, for example, being able to record up to 5 hours in voice recorder. The file manager is fully extended, so you can browse any folder, any file. There's a possibility of using the Nokia Pure font actually integrated in at the base level in the next version of the Delight firmware. So plenty to look forward to there. There is the usual caveat. I suppose if you don't follow the instructions exactly, you do risk bricking your device. So this is obviously something to do on a device which is out of warranty in the first place. My plan is to, as the year goes on, and I'm sure that the N8, for example, is not going to get any more updates from Nokia, even small ones, then I'm going to leap in and I'll do a step-by-step tutorial, as I did with the IS910, blow-by-blow, showing how to apply the custom firmware, all the pros and cons, all the caveats, and we'll see how we get on. Good plan, Rafe?
Yes, although you say minimal risk, we should emphasise that if you do decide to do this, it's not down to us. You have to decide whether you want to do it yourself, so please don't complain to us. I've always sort of not frowned on these custom firmwares, but I've never really seen the point, because some of the things they bring in just didn't add enough value for the amount of time I'd have to spend applying them, and there was always a risk of kind of instability. And certainly in some of the early ones that I did try out, it tended to have a negative effect on the battery life. I mean, what these are doing a lot of the time is actually collecting various components together and then packaging them up and sort of putting them into this custom firmware, rather than, it makes it sound like, you're developing a new firmware altogether. It's not that. It's really changing a few configuration files. So, for example, the one that says no USB pop-ups, that's actually a configuration file hidden somewhere in the system that you can specify things like that, or including some extra apps, or including some more screensavers from the past. I'm not against it. It is very much a legal grey area, so you have to be careful. Well, I don't think it's a grey area. I think it's probably fair to say that it's not legal to do this. Whether anyone's going to come back and get you for using it, well, I think that's very unlikely. I think more likely is that Nokia might shut down the places where you can download it or the person providing it. There are a few examples from the Android world where there have been legal cases and damages sought, but I really wouldn't expect that to happen this time around on the Symbian world.
I'd have thought it was legal in the sense that no one's going to come and arrest you if you apply custom firmware to your phone, but of course you are definitely 100.0% breaking the terms of the warranty.
Yeah, yes, that's right. I suspect that actually the process of downloading the files technically probably is illegal because it's owned by someone else. But as I say, it's a grey area. I mean, what's probably not in question is that the people that are actually creating these, are breaking sort of copyright and things like that. But as I say, it's not one that I'm going to get, too upset about. Normally, I'm sort of quite strict about that kind of use of illegal software. I think particularly if you draw a line where saying, well, it's no longer being developed by anyone else, you can kind of shake your head and ignore it. I think it's more problematic when it's for just released devices and you're enabling or putting on something that a manufacturer specifically you didn't want to happen. But having said that, it's kind of happens with any consumer electronics. People will take it apart in some form, unlock it, and because so much of this is about software or some kind of configuration file where you're just changing something from a one to a naught, of course it's going to happen. And I think any manufacturer that sort of takes too much action against it would be being very short-sighted. Some clearly try and stop it happening by locking bootloaders and things like that, and it will depend on what device you have. But in the Symbian world, in one sense, it's nice to see, simply because it means that people can get more life out of their older devices.
One final item I wanted to throw out to our listeners, and maybe yourself, Rafe, is something that drives me mad, and Bell Feature Pack 2 on things like the Nokia 808. Now, on previous versions of Symbian, on every other mobile device, you type a wrong word. So, for example, the, you put in T-E-H, spell it wrong, and the software leaps in and corrects it. On Bell Feature Pack 2, you type in T-E-H, and the is offered on the corrections bar above the keyboard, and you have to, A, spot that you've typed it wrong in real time, B, reach up and tap on the right word. And it just takes time and it's frustrating. I want to carry on typing. Is there any kind of workaround? Is there any kind of setting? Is there anything I can do to re-enable real-time correction under Bell Feature Pack 2? Because it's driving me absolutely bonkers.
I'm not sure. We'll have to throw this one out to the listeners because I've actually got used to using that correction bar. In fact, it's kind of something I preferred. I liked being in control of when the corrections would happen, and it's kind of what I got used to. But I know you're not the only one that has been driving up the wall. I've seen a few comments on Twitter since that update came out. So actually, it's a good question. And no, I don't know. I suspect it's probably not possible because it's something that would be in the settings if it were there, and actually replacing the keyboard altogether is a bit tricky. I know some people have gone the route of using swipe in order to kind of get around this and have an alternative text input method, so maybe that's something you'd like to try out again.
Yeah, I did play with Swiper a couple of months back and got on okay with it, but the sheer number of versions, there was a beta version which had more functionality than the released version, which is actually compatible with the Belfeature Pack 2, except it's not quite, and there's still some bugs. All in all, I came away basically with my head hurting. So if you've got any answers to that question, or indeed you've got any other questions for us to answer, or want to see particular areas of interest, hardware, software, whatever, discussed on the All About Siemens Insight podcast, do please reach out to us. What email address should they use?
Well, people can use Rafe at allaboutsymbian.com, and that will ensure it gets to me, or they can send it directly to you as well, Steve, which will work, Steve, at allaboutsymbian.com as well.
Okay, I think we're about out of time. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to Rafe Blanford for being on. And do please join us in a couple of weeks' time. Hopefully there will be another All About Symbian Insight podcast. Bye-bye for now.